Okay, so we don't have that much time left. We have about maybe 20 minutes for questions and answers. And then perhaps the last few minutes, I'll just make a quick summary about the issues that need more attention when you talk about science governance in Africa. So I'll take a few questions and then the answers. I have the right and the left. I don't know who started first, but let's have the lady and then the gentleman there. Oh my God, it's going to take another 2 hours.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can
thank
you, you please make it short and very just the question essentially, not
okay, thank you very much. My name is Thandi Mgwebe. I'm from the National Research Foundation of South Africa. Thank you very much. You've highlighted a number of challenges in Africa, but I've got a comment that perhaps I'd like you to tap your brains on a question. Science, STI policies in Africa have evolved very differently in different countries, and that has been because of the various conditions, various levels of economic development of the different regions within Africa, and also the differences in human resource development within the different countries. But there are common themes. Firstly, there are a lot of pockets of excellence within Africa that we haven't mentioned at all, which are Africa participates in a number of global networks which have been mentioned before in various sessions. There are pockets of excellence. I can mention a few, for example, the African Institute of Mathematical Sciences and so on. But there's untapped resources that I would like to hear your views on. For example, the role of indigenous knowledge in Africa. And the role of how can we use the social innovation and inclusive innovation that has got a lot of potential in Africa for economic development and development within Africa.
Thank you. I will take about 5 questions and then I will ask the panelists to reply. There's a gentleman over there. No, this one here, yes.
Just it's a brief brief comment on the session, which was very positive and very and very energetic to start with. But I'm particularly grateful for the last 2 talks, which emphasized the necessity of evidence-based procedures, and a couple of points that ring very true with why I'm here, because we're involved in the Globin 2020 initiative to prevent sickle cell disease, for example, in Africa, and so on, which addresses many of the points that the speakers raised, which is to save the new generation, basically, of Africans, those many children that will be born and that will be affected, and that Africa has a chance now to jump the gap, the technology gap that we've passed through. I'm from Cyprus, so we've gone through traditional development of methods, and you can jump onto new technologies very, very quickly. And in this, and this goes to the last speaker, we should put emphasis on the diaspora scientists who can come in and help, because that's what happened in Cyprus as well. Banos Ioannou came in from the outside to introduce those technologies. That's very important and critical. And I think a central point is that money is not the key point, and both of you put the money kind of at the back of the talk. And that's why, of course, the thinking and the evidence has to come first. And in these sorts of programs, when you have the evidence and when you collect the data, then you can also convince your governments or the overriding bodies to also invest afterwards and to do this strategically and evidence-based.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, right there, at the back there. And then I will move to the other side.
A question about the merger of AMCOST and education side of things. How important is that? Is that something that has been lacking, the link between science and education in Africa? And I mean, how important is a merger like that? Is that just a minor sort of move on the sort of African Union side of things, or will it really make a difference? Just your opinion.
Okay, good
on
question.
That.
Good
Thank
question.
You.
Okay.
I'm Peter Tindemann, Secretary General of Euroscience, and I've been working quite a bit in Africa. You mentioned lots of challenges, and they're all very real. I recognize them. But why aren't we focusing on the one challenge that really counts, I think, money, funding? And I'm referring to a concept which economists have developed, the low and middle income countries trap. It's a reflection on the fact that in the 50s and early 60s, many countries in Africa and East and Southeast Asia were at the same levels of income. And all the Asian countries have have grown phenomenally. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear, if you look at the analysis, it's investments in education, higher education and research, nothing else. That's it.
Okay, I think before we move further, let's just see if there are any answers that you have for some of these questions. Shall we begin with you?
I think mine were mainly comments on what I had to say, but I think in terms, and I hesitate to use it, but in South Africa, in terms of social inclusion or inclusive development or innovation and IKS, we have programs in South Africa specifically designed and even developed new degree courses to especially look at indigenous resources and knowledge and how you can bring that forward into the mainstream, because it's important in our cultures as well.
Okay, Francisco.
Okay, concerning the role of indigenous available material, it could be used to make either science very close to the students. For example, in physics, I know that when we started construction of ray boxes, meter bridges, using our local resources, students appreciated physics more than ever before. So it has a lot to do in science, understanding science. Therefore, when science is understood, invariably technology and innovation, because this is sort of innovation, getting a new idea of using our local resources to make some of these equipments that are always foreign to them.
Thank you. Roma?
So as mentioned for the last question, the issue of higher education is very important. From my experience as Minister of Education, from 2020-2015, you have the Millennium Development Goals, but also you have the Education for All Goals. If you wanted to get money for higher education during that period, it will not work. The development banks, multilateral in general, and bilateral, they will all focus on primary education. And even in Rwanda, they will ask, why do you want higher education if you don't have primary? But they don't realize that even the teacher in primary school has to be taught by somebody else. The president of Rwanda has actually to go to fight to build the Kigali Institute of Science and Technology. They told him, you need just primary school. So, which was very good, because Rwanda, coming from war, it was very important to put all these children in school, because if you don't put them in school, tomorrow they become child soldiers. So you just need to be very careful. So throughout the developing world, in Africa in general, children were put in primary school. But now these children who benefited from the education for all are at the gate of higher education. But the higher education is not ready. Just before that period, throughout the continent of Africa, higher education was very advanced. Actually, you had more, the proportion of teachers with PhD in the school, in the university, were very, very high. But what happened is what? There is more tertiary education now, but the number of teachers with PhD didn't really change. Most of them are retiring. So this means that we are in a situation where we have a tertiary education, which is actually secondary school. This is the reality. So that will require a lot of investment throughout government funding, throughout bilateral, multilateral, but throughout also South-South cooperation that we saw, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, coming up, giving really donating fellowship to do PhD. That will be very, very central.
Thank you. So for the first comment, effectively, there are a lot of initiatives. It would be difficult to present all in 15 minutes. A lot of center of excellences in Africa. And so also the role of indigenous knowledge is also taking into account in many African countries, even in the STISA. And about the inclusive innovation and social, think that I just talk about one element about the informal sector, which contribute to some in some country to 50% of the GDP of in some country, and also even in terms of creating jobs in a lot of countries. This is one part of that, but I'm not. I think that we have to take into account the social innovation and at least the inclusive is very important with regard to the growth we have, and then it's dangerous to create riches and to create more poor when you have growth. You have to have at least an inclusive growth. Regarding the AMCOST, in fact, there is the AMCOST. These are political institution, you know, between Minister of Science and Technology, and then at the African Union, they changed this institutional arrangement to create now a technical committee, which will be very close to the head of states, to have something which can advise the head of states instead of having only a ministerial conference where the conference is organized every 2 years, and then after it is difficult to coordinate. And then that's why the technical committee was set up. It is not only on science education, but also on infrastructure, on peace and security, and all the organization of African Union Commission. And then, yes, okay. Okay, no problem. I just want to talk about.
I have to take four more questions.
Okay, no.
And we'll finish.
Okay.
One, two, three, four. Please.
Thank you very much, panelists. My name is Abdeslam Bhatt from Morocco. I can't agree more on all the challenges and the opportunities you've highlighted. Just wanted to end three or four more as keywords, and you can deconstruct them. I'm sure you, if you had time, probably you have mentioned them. One of them is synergy among scientists, African scientists within Africa and African scientists outside Africa, which my colleague mentioned, which is scientists in diaspora, but also synergies among Africans and governments, scientists and governments, and scientists and private sector. So there should be like kind of a multifaceted synergy, synergies among scientists within and outside Africa. Second one is leadership. Leadership in Africa and leadership in science within Africa. This is another thing. And by the way, these things, they are not related to financial aspect. These are structural aspects that science in Africa need to look into. So leadership in science, because one of the reasons why we don't, as my colleague Morenzi said at the beginning, poor structure, because in Africa we have good scientists, but we don't have a good team of scientists who work at the continental level. So that's another thing we have to rethink about leadership of science in Africa. The third one is excellence of science, like how African scientists perceive excellence. Do we have a unified vision about excellence in science? And the fourth one is communicating science. And thank you.
Thank you, Nizar Hassan from UNESCO. I have actually, my question is directed to my friend Al-Mahmi. I know it's not justice to talk about strategy in 10 minutes, but I really want to know whether things were happening in a participatory approach from the national to the regional level first, to make sure that you actually get the commitment of governments. If you're telling me that since 1980, 54 countries are below 1%, and now you are dreaming about 2%, how real is that? And if you can just answer another question, how long did it take the process to get to the document adopted? How much time? Was it done through surveys, or it was really a lot of technical consultation meetings and stuff like that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it on? Yeah. So I just want to apologize. I know nothing about Africa, but I just want to make a point. Yeah.
Yeah, I know you. So in the European Union, we don't use the word Europe too much. We mean the Commission and 8% of our EU funding. The total funding is about 8% of the budget. But I heard nothing about the African Union and the role of the African Commissioner for Research. And I'm wondering how strong that is as a structuring effect for the continent. Okay, I missed that. But secondly, I want to tell, not a joke, but just an observation from the conference. When I was queuing for food, and I agree with the lady here about culture and about you can throw money at the problems, but if you don't get the mindset right, you don't succeed. So when I was queuing for food, there was two African delegates in front of me, and I was listening into the conversation, and it went a little bit like this. My country's poorer than your country. No, no, it's not. It can't be. Okay, how many big roads do you have? We have 6. Okay, we have 4. Yeah, but how many twirly boards do you have on those roads? I don't know. Okay, how many conveyor belts do you have for the luggage at your national airport? We have 2. Well, we have 1, but it's broken. So what I'm saying is, even at that level, when you meet Africans, they're never proud enough to tell you about the success factors in Africa. So I'm just being a critic there and saying, I want to hear the success stories and less about the poverty and the problems and more about the opportunities and less about the challenges.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ernesto Fernandez Polso from UNESCO Montevideo office. When I used to be in Namibia, we were talking about the AMCOS Science and Technology Strategic Plan. Now we have STISA. What changed? And were there an evaluation of the results of the previous strategy?
Thank you. Finally, yes.
I'm Tolu Oni. I'm a co-chair of the South African Young Academy of Science and the Next Einstein Forum Fellow. It's a comment. I'm really glad to hear about to highlight the importance of the need for South-South, in particular the need for collaboration amongst African scientists, but I just think it'd be important to highlight what the tangible barriers to those are, and in particular, the policies around circulation within the continent that are an active barrier for us within the continent to actually circulate more effectively in a way that doesn't necessarily exist if you're coming from elsewhere. And I think this speaks to the need for when we're having these conversations about science and about working together for development, it has to happen in parallel or with the parallel policies around that can promote those, specifically can promote better circulation and the visa regulations, et cetera, that promote and can hinder circulation of African scientists within the continent. And I think it's something that we need to address.
Very good. Okay, any of you would like to respond to some of these questions? They're mostly comments.
Yes, I have maybe. Quickly, I will. Just to tell that we go from the consolidated plan of action 2015-2012. In 2012, a review has been done starting in 2012. A participatory, even UNESCO was involved, UNECA and REX. We did the CPA review, and then this brings to now the STISA. And the STISA has been adopted in 2014, last year. And then the documents are available. Maybe I have only one here. And then regarding to, I think that is a question. The 1%, it is at least not 1%. Invest at least 1%.
How committed the government is that? You don't have 1%.
The problem is that when they said in 1980, 1%, until 2007, you cannot say how much because they don't evaluate, you don't measure, you don't know what you don't measure. When you say at least 1%, and you don't collect data, you cannot know if the investment is done. That's why in 2007, I think that Ernesto is here with UNESCO, UIS, they did a lot of capacity building of Africans to collect data. in 2007, there is an African Science Technology Innovation Indicator, ASTI. This allows now every at least 20 countries or 30 countries to start now collecting R&D data and innovation. Now we can say that for some countries are investing less or more. There is two reports, African Innovation Outlook, where you can find now data. Even now with the UNESCO Institute of Statistics, you can have now African data. The problem is, without data, you cannot estimate the 1%. This is why now our C is and now an institution. Despite now the initiative, there is now the institution based in Malabo, which now will have to collect now the data and in the whole continent.
I'd like to say that on the issue of a success story or just hearing bad stories. In Africa, the mother, they carry the baby on the back. If you squeeze, sometimes you may make a mistake and you squeeze the baby. If the baby doesn't cry, it can die. So you understand that it is important to emphasize what is lacking so that we can know where to go. We just finished one development agenda, the Millennium Development Goals. This is the past. The future now is the 2030 development agenda. Where is Africa? What are the institutions of higher education, institutions of research? What are the government doing? But what is the good story, as I said, is that now there is a plan for 2063 and in particular 2024, the science strategy. From the experience I have, if the AU Commission and the other institutions really make their effort to implement, it will be good. In 2000, Rwanda adopted a policy on what they call the National Information Communication Infrastructure Plan, the NICI plan, for 20 years, rolling every 5 years. So when I arrived in Rwanda, they have the plan. And I was very lucky to be part of the implementation. So they had the first 5 years, the governance. The next 5 years, the infrastructure. The next 5 years, the service. Now they are meaning the service, now they are moving to the knowledge economy. So during the period, at least when I was there, from the infrastructure, I mean the governance, the educational part of the ICT, and putting in implementing the fiber optic that covers the whole country. So every 5 years, something was done, and during those 5 years, there was a plan. And I think that this, the way I see the African Commission is moving forward, it seems to be positive. The issue of circulation is very bad on the continent. I was listening at a conference at the Milken Institute in the U.S. where they discussing on the issue of energy on the continent. Not only the transport is very bad, but there is barrier for visa. Somebody told me he was in Rwanda. He went to a country. He was invited in a country B. And then he couldn't get the visa in Rwanda. He went to a country C to get the visa at the embassy in that country. And that country told me, no, you are not a resident of here. So the guy returned back to Rwanda. And he was invited in a science conference. And this is as bad as it is on the continent. But it is good to emphasize that so we can see how can it be changed. But apparently, the African Union is working on the issue of one passport. They are working on that. That could be positive for the future. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, all of you. I think this has been quite an exciting and fruitful discussion with lots of issues being raised and recommendations. It will be very hard to summarize what has been said so far. But let me just, by way of conclusions, just mention a few issues that I feel are very important that have been discussed here. I think the most important issue, in my view, that has been presented today and debated is the issue of education and research, and the issue of reforming the schools and universities to improve the quality of research and education, to train and retain. It's not just retain, training, but training and retaining homegrown, world-class, problem-solving scientists, engineers, and technologists. This is an issue that I think Africa has been battling with for a long time. And related to this, of course, will be how you can actually train students. In Africa, many of the universities are not up to that standard for training PhD students, so we have to use collaboration. So that is what Roma mentioned, what Francisca mentioned, about South-South and North-South cooperation in higher education. TWAS has elaborate programs in doing this. But we have to use this until our institutions are strong enough to provide PhD training. But training in itself, of course, is not sufficient if you really want to address problems. And what is really missing in the continent is how the universities are prepared to link up with development issues. And this one proposal probably was not discussed here that I would like to present from my own viewpoint is it would be excellent if a few of the excellent universities in Africa start to think about developing what I call integrated innovation centers, centers that look at the problems, but in an integrated fashion, interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary, and looking at innovation in a holistic manner. Innovation is not just science and technology innovation. As we heard this morning from Sydney, from Saudi Arabia, that there's social innovation. But in addition to that, there is also business innovation. If you really want to scale up the innovation itself and make it commercial, you have to look at these three innovations as one and have an integrated innovation. I think this is something perhaps that should be tried in some of the universities in Africa, how to build that. The third issue really relates to the success stories. I find this, you mentioned that, but this is really a very important one. And Africa does have a number of success stories. And I think it would be good if we start to think about a portfolio of success stories where science, technology, and innovation has been developed and implemented and utilized to solve real-life problems. It's not easy to identify some of these. TWAS has started to do that. And if you remember, Peter, you have issued a number of case studies where this has really been applied. And I think it is important to expand that portfolio of success stories and make it available to the rest of Africa and the world to know that there is something happening. It's not all bad stories, but there are also some excellent and good stories. The diaspora, I think, is very, very important, and the ways and means to develop an effective governance strategies to engage the diaspora in capacity building programs in Africa, very important. I very liked the example of Al-Haji. I think this is an excellent example, which I think we should repeat whenever we meet. And finally, the government role in all that. Science, technology, and innovation policy is central, and many African countries do have that, but many of them do not have the success of Rwanda. And I think Roman explained it very well, how Rwanda has actually managed not only just to develop the science, technology, and innovation policy, but to make sure that the policy is implemented, is integrated into the development plan. And I think that is more or less what I have captured as main issues raised here. But with this, I really, first of all, let's thank our panelists. I think they've done a marvelous job. And I thank you also for your questions and for your patience. I think we've exceeded 10 minutes. Diana, by the way, is the person who really not only thought of this panel, but she is also the one who has driven the main issues to be discussed. Thank you so much, Diana.